What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? Each week, Politalk dives straight into the tough questions, like who is actually stepping in to save people from sorcery accusation violence in Papua New Guinea?
So she was gasping for air inside the people in a group there, and then they accused her, like, you must be the sorceress.
To listen, search Politalk in your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
I like that it's this uncomplicated communal centering thing in whatever we're doing. I think that's why we like it. We're also good at it, I have to say. Pretty hard to beat an Islander choir, man.
I find that I sing a lot. For somebody who is a non-performer, I actually sing a lot. Like I sing when I work. I hum when I'm at the grocery shopping, you know, evening. I'm humming along. Then I guess I do it because it makes me feel great.
I reckon it's impossible to be in a bad mood when you're singing. We cover a lot of serious issues on this show, and it's really important we do that. But we love to celebrate the meaningful things in life, and something most of us have in common is our love for singing. I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about the joy of song. How many times have you been at a community event and someone breaks out into the first few lines of a song, and then everyone joins with all our harmonies? There's nothing like that joyful feeling. But can you still feel the joy when you're on a stage in front of a huge audience? And it's a very different genre. Well, it's a yes for my first guest, Heru Pinkasova. She is a Papua New Guinean Australian opera singer, and she loves it. She says music has been part of her life for as long as she can remember.
Like most Papuan and any Pacific Islanders, we grow up just having music and singing around us. It's a normal thing. It's not a special thing. So I was always singing as a kid. I say that I grew up with the three B's, the Beatles, the Beach Boys, and Boney M. You know, come home from school and my mum would put on Boney M and she'd have maybe fried scones ready for us. But my father, with an Anglo background, he took music very seriously. He loves his music. He played piano very well and he loved choirs. He loved his time in PNG with choirs. So growing up, he made sure his kids all took music lessons, were in the choir or an orchestra or had an instrument.
I see.
Yeah, I grew up in Cairns and I love Cairns, but at the end of high school, you just want to leave because you want to go somewhere bigger. And music was kind of my ticket to do something. I didn't see myself as being academic. So I thought I'd study a music degree and maybe end up teaching music at home. After my first year or so, it sort of turned out my voice is operatic and I just kind of pursued it from there. It was never a dream, right? I'd never been to an opera. I knew about choir music, like church music, choir music, but I'd never seen an opera production. So I feel like I just stumbled into it and now I'm still here. Yeah. People still keep asking me to sing for things. It's kind of amazing because with an opera voice, you never know what you're going to get. From the voice that you hear someone at 15 to when they're 50, you don't quite know how the voice is going to develop.
I see.
And mine fully kind of exploded. So I always had a very sweet, clear voice. But now I have a really full, rich voice, and I like to say I could make grown men cry.
And how does singing bring you joy?
Well, there's singing for all the different moments in your life. I hear people just say a phrase and a pop song from the 80s jumps in my head, you know, like these little songs just, I kind of have a huge encyclopedia of songs in my mind, things that I've sung different times. My mother instilled a love of music also with her Islander songs, and she was always very comfortable just singing. You know, we come home from school and there's a record on. You're bored or something at home and she'd put on music and let's dance. Her love of music, it's extended to us. So like since I've had kids, She's made little songs about the grandkids.
Oh.
And they're so cute. They're just little things, you know, like my older one, she made a song about him washing in the laundry tub and him splashing. And in language, it's so cute. It's just the cutest thing, you know. And then whenever she washes him, she used to sing the song. And now she still embarrasses him because she's 20 and he's a big man and she'll still sing that song when she sees him. So I think it's that kind of, like, joy that it just, it's through your life. You know, it's not a separate part of your life. It's kind of woven into the fabric of your day-to-day.
And what do you love about what singing does for your body and your mind?
It kind of takes a moment out of time and slows everything down. Through classical singing, I've learned about how to handle nerves. And it's kind of similar to the sports psychologists, how to handle nerves and how to use adrenaline to your advantage before you do a big task. If you're performing in an opera, it's quite a mammoth thing that you're undertaking. You feel wonderful, but it's sort of like surfing a wave or balancing on a tightrope. But you've got to engage your whole body, but also focus at the same time. The psychologists talk about it, that you're sort of in the zone, you're in the moment. With opera singing, I get that, and it's fantastic. And at the end of it, your body feels, you're really using all of your body and it's really satisfying. So it's kind of addictive.
Tell me about the physical aspects of singing opera. Is it like an exercise?
Yeah, it is. It is. But it uses parts of natural things like with your voice, let's say when you yell, which they do in the village, or even when they're singing out to someone, you sing on, it's this twang. So it's the nasal part of your voice where it's really like, hey, you know, when you really call out. Opera singing is the same thing, but with a lot of air pumped through it. So it's the same kind of thing when you call out. And if you yell, you can feel your diaphragm kick in.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you're laughing, you feel your diaphragm kind of kicking in. It's the same experience as doing that, but with time you practice slowly to stay in that state longer, so you train the muscles to stay, your diaphragm to stay down and your rib cage to stay open. So with practice you just develop it, getting, you know, just get stronger and stronger. I think when you sing it uses different parts of the brain that crosses over between left and right hemispheres, so it's kind of like a brain massage, if you want to say, or it uses all of it. So that's why I think it's really satisfying, and it can take you out of whatever moment you're having. If it's very stressful or you're tired, when you hear a song or you hum a song, it takes your brain somewhere else, and it's a relief, you know, and you feel something. It connects to your emotions.
Yeah.
We probably all had that thing where you hear some song and it just makes you really sad, but in a good sad, because it reminds you of something or someone, you know. So, it's beneficial to connect to your emotions throughout the day. So I think that's the nice thing about music, that it connects you to different times or takes you out of your day-to-day grind and lets your body experience a bit of peace.
Yeah. Tell us about how you get your vocals over yourself ready before a performance.
The advantage of being older is that my voice and my body are tougher now. My vocal cords are tougher, so I suppose that it's like muscle memory. You remember what you're doing. My little routines, if I know I'm going to be singing a lot or if it's a day of a performance, I just have a light dinner, light food, rice and veggies, my kalkal, sweet potato, greens, maybe meat, but just something like chicken. Like, I won't have anything heavy, so your body digests it really quickly, and not too soon before you perform. So you can't perform on a full stomach. I'll take vocal rest, so I'll try not to speak too much. But also before performance, I build up. So at least 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something, I'll be singing a bit every day to get myself back into shape. And it's, people call it in the theatre, like, you've got to be stage fit, which doesn't mean I can run a marathon, but you've got the mental and physical capacity to concentrate on the task.
I see.
You know, it's sometimes when you see, like, older performers can outdo the young ones because they've got that mental capacity. and the muscle memory, just focus and stay fit. With a vocal warm-up, you hum just a few notes and then you practice your scales up and down. And I practice the twang where you yell.
Yeah.
Or you can call that also a siren.
Okay.
When people go, oh, you're like...
You practice that as well.
Some of those, yeah, yeah. I just remember like yelling when you're a kid, yelling at your brothers and sisters.
And Hero, you've lived in Australia for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had a chance to sing in Papua New Guinea?
Not classically, but I would really love to. I haven't been back for quite a while, but my boys, I've got some kids and they're big and they really want to go to PNG and meet their cousins. So actually this year we're hoping to go in the middle of the year. And I've got the opportunity to be involved in a project up in the north part of PNG in Sisano.
Oh, okay.
In Sipik.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's actually a project. I'm just organising it now. But that's actually also about the joy of music, because it's about demonstrating the resilience of the local women and community after it's been about 27 years since a big tsunami hit their place and wiped out their villages. And they have an anniversary on the 17th of July every year marking the tsunami.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to go there and to work with the ladies and document their experiences. And the nice thing is this is an example of the joy of music, because the community has this festival every year.
Yeah.
And the music is beautiful. It's not sad, right? There's a lot of songs in Pidgin and some other native songs. And it shows their resilience. They tell their stories through their songs. So I'm hoping I can get up there. I've sort of been invited to go to help them just to collect their songs and create a piece of music that represents them. If I'm lucky, I can bring some of the women here. But I'm really looking forward to working with these ladies and helping them create something that can represent them outside of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Australia, in even other places, because it's also a tiny place. And in the international level, no one barely knows they exist, right, apart from this terrible tsunami. Yeah. And actually, when I go over, I hope I can maybe create some opportunities to perform there and actually maybe work with local people in Port Moresby and that area.
Why do you think singing is so important to us Pacific Islanders?
It's communal, it's uncomplicated, and it's very kind of organizing and centering in a way without having to explain it. Sometimes when I see things on the news or TV shows or in lectures or whatever, in the Western world, there's a lot of explaining, right? Mm. People talk a lot and sometimes they just give me a headache. Whereas Islanders are more like, you do as I do, just follow, right? Mm. And with the singing, sometimes you can just follow along. Yeah, we teach ourselves because you just sing with the group.
Yeah.
You know, like as a kid, I sang in a choir in Cairns. It was great. But I kind of got my own, like being able to sing harmonies properly by going to PNG and singing with my cousins when they go to Mass on a Sunday, or when they go home and you're singing, you just listen for the harmonies and you just click in to your cousin sitting next to you, or, you know, some other voice you can hear. So I think we like it because it's uncomplicated. It enables us to teach ourselves. It's really centering and very inclusive. You don't have to sound great. You just have to hum, right?
Yeah.
And you're part of the group.
Exactly.
Yeah, and no one pressures you to learn all the words. You just sing along, and when you work out the words, you work out the words.
Exactly.
So
if you don't, you just hum along.
You just hum along.
Exactly.
And, you know, no one's going to scold you. Like, no one really cares. They're just... So I like that it's this uncomplicated, communal, centering thing in whatever we're doing. I think that's why we like it. We're also good at it, I have to say. Pretty hard to beat an Islander choir, man. We sound so good, right? We sound so good.
Definitely.
And it's also effortless. You ever watch a football team or anyone sing, like big groups, they barely move their mouths, but the sound is incredible, right? So we sound really good.
That's opera singer Hero Pinkasova, and just listen to that amazing voice.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
So why does singing bring joy? Why does it bring us together? And why, as Pacific Islanders, have we always come together to join each other in song? Dr. Rita Seumanu Tafapalala grew up in Aotearoa, New Zealand's Samoan diaspora, and she's an ethnomusicologist, which is a great word for someone who studies music within cultures and societies. When she moved to Melbourne, she started a Pacifica choir to find people from her community. I asked her why singing brings her so much joy.
In this stage of my life, it's a very therapeutic exercise. It's such a wonderful art form, music, to be able to vocalize and vocalize something in a very special way. In our culture, my culture, Samoan culture, we talk about songs being a site for historical recording. And sometimes I think that's an art form that has been maybe lost in community, that we've forgotten that that's what we can use music for, not just for listening, but for something to partake in and something that you can use to just feel really great about being Samoan, particularly in my case. And so that's what music is for me. It's therapeutic because when I sing and I sing in a choir and my role as a choir director, I'm encouraging people to sing. It's such a meaningful and fulfilling experience for me when we partake in it together. So that's what singing and music is for me.
Tell me about your research as an ethnomusicologist. What did that involve?
About 10 years ago, I entered the field of ethnomusicology as a student. I have been a music practitioner my whole life from the age of 4, since doing piano lessons with my father, and then my father sending me off to a piano music school where I grew up in Auckland, New Zealand, and that involved learning classical music. And so the whole point of that was my father was a choir director for the Samoan church and needed somebody to play the piano while he can teach the choir the songs. And this is all in the Samoan language and singing Samoan worship songs. And so the plan was that I would learn. And so as I got older and I got the skills, I then joined my father and the music team for choir. And I guess growing up playing this classical piano accompaniment, while it was beautiful to have a skill like that, as I became older and realized the importance of my Samoan culture, I then started to question where was the Samoan music? And I realized that it happened in its own moment, and it was a different type of musical experience. It wasn't the piano with the classical, it was actually the singing with your full chest. It was singing alongside mostly times a cappella, and if accompanied with a guitar, with a rolled up mat, with a very Samoan sound. And so I guess when I was in my 20s, I really wanted to learn more about Samoan music. But at the same time, I was then living as a young adult in Melbourne, Australia, and people knew of me as a choir director. And so there was a request that I put together an informal singing group so that those who were here who were not connected to a Pacific church in that sense and no longer having access to cultural music, and you know, a lot of that happens within the church communities. And so I would put together this informal group. People would come and we'd just jam Pacific songs. So I did that and I realized, oh, I want to go back to university and maybe get a choral conducting type of qualification. So I did the Bachelor of Music at ACU, which is the Australian Catholic University in Fitzroy. And that program was very heavily centered on liturgical music, music and with the choral music. So I did the choir thing at ACU. I'm not Catholic, but it was all Catholic music and I absolutely loved it. It was very much very elite and very art type of music. However, it was during that degree that I started to question why I was spending so much time writing essays on, you know, Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, men whose music I really couldn't relate to because I was a pianist for the Samoan Church Choir. So then I really felt this call to look up Samoan music. And so one day I looked in the library and saw a monograph, and it was titled Traditional Samoan Music by Dr. Richard Moyle. And it was from the 1960s fieldwork. And as I read that monograph, I realized that I couldn't really relate to the songs that were in the book, because, and that made me question myself as a Samoan, like, wow, I'm a child that's grew up in the 80s, and yet I don't understand some of these songs. Then I realized, oh, that's a very historical, you know, research of Samoan songs, Samoan music. And that's when I sat there thinking to myself, well, how do I do this? But how do I do this? The music that a lot of Samoans are singing today. So then I was told about the field of ethnomusicology, and I was referred to the University of Melbourne because that's where the department was. So I went there and I did my honours after the BMAS at ACU. And that was my very first year learning how to be a researcher and, you know, in the academy and the scholarship of Samoan music. And it involved data collection and research questions and frameworks and writing a thesis. And so I did that in my honours year and I learned so much. But I guess I got into ethnomusicology when I look back, it was because as a practitioner, I guess I was really finding a way to advocate for my traditional, my cultural music. I didn't want to be just a performer. I wanted to be a creator of it. And I also wanted to be an advocate and an activist of this type of music. And so that's how I ended up doing the honours. And then I started the masters. And then before you knew it, I was doing a PhD. And then I thought, oh no. Oh no, I'm really serious now. I've got to finish this PhD, which I did recently. So that's how I got into ethnomusicology. And my particular research, I chose a genre of Samoan song. And I chose my community, the Samoan migrant community in New Zealand, because that one, I could talk about my lived experience as a child growing up in the Samoan communities there. I could talk about myself being a daughter of a Samoan composer and what I witnessed watching my dad work through this genre. I could talk about my experience as a performer and also as the bag holder when I was too young to perform and my parents were performing. And so I was on the side holding my mom's bags and my dad's jackets and things like that. And then later on, I could talk about it as an adult, as a researcher, being able to step back and understanding the genre. So that's what I focused on. And I guess the bigger picture really was about talking about the musical traditions of Samoan communities in diaspora and how you continue that genre from the homeland and take it to a new environment and how that genre helps a community to migrate, settle and navigate new identities as Samoans in another land. So in this case, in New Zealand.
So Rita, researching this, what did you learn about how singing brings people together?
What I learned about singing bringing people together was the fact that the gathering, the whole experience of singing something that we all understood. You could be living in New Zealand, but you could be singing and partaking in this Samoan genre that has connections to your homeland. Not only that, it has connections to your ancestors from a time before, you know, the missionization of the Pacific, if you will. And so, and that to me is a very special thing. What I also found as a researcher, when I looked at this genre, which was called Bese Ole Whalinga in Aotearoa, Songs for a Church Opening Event, what I was able to understand was that when you create and when you perform and when you continue this musical tradition from the homeland, you're able to continue the cultural aspects of it. So in the case of Samoan music, it could be the fact that chiefs within the village, they have a special part to play in the performance of this genre. Samoan composers, they have a very, very important part to play in Samoan genres of song. And so for me, it was just wonderful to see that through singing and through maintaining it as a group, you're able to continue these cultural elements that you carry on from the homeland, which I think is very special and so important in for Samoan migrant communities. And so that's what I was able to take from that.
The more I learn about the ways that people come together to sing, the more I realize there is something primal about singing. Do you sing a lot yourself?
I sing in my role as a choir director. I'm not a professional singer. I guess that wasn't a road that I was interested in taking, but I do sing a lot in culture. When we're at church, I'm singing at the top of my lungs. Sometimes I'm behind the piano. Sometimes I'm conducting the choir and singing in front of them to kind of, you know, get everybody on board with the hymn. I sing when I'm at home with the kids, and I find that I sing a lot. For somebody who is a non-performer, I actually sing a lot. Like I sing when I work. I hum when I'm at Coles, at the grocery shopping, you know, evening, I'm humming along. If I'm in a cafe and I hear something in on the speakers, I will sing along, or I will, and that's, people have noted that about me. Like when I'm with having lunch with somebody, they'll comment, "Oh, you love to sing." And I'm like, "I do actually love to sing, but I'm not a singer in that sense." And I guess I do it because it makes me feel great. And I connect instantly when I hear songs on the speaker, and it can be any genre. I will know the tune, and I don't have to like the singer. I just have to like the sound and the way it's, you know, the way it makes me feel at that point in time. So I do sing a lot.
Do you see the joy in people's faces when you're directing the choir?
I sure do. I see all their facials. I see them when they are moved by what they're singing, because Psalm 1 song is very much a priority as the message that you're singing. And so I always encourage my choir singers, yes, the melody may be beautiful and very pleasing to the ear, but the whole point of singing is the message that you're conveying to the listener. And so I really do encourage my choir singers to connect with the lyrics, connect with the message. And wherever possible, I try and help them understand the broader context of the message and what it could mean. And sometimes in our role as choir directors, that's our role to do that too. We're like the head cheerleaders, right? Hyping up our cheer squad. And so I guess when I hype up my choir, and when we start to sing and they really start to feel this affinity with the message that they're singing, that's when I really do start to see the expressions from their faces, whether the melody is a little bit difficult in certain parts of the song and they're reaching that note, or whether we're coming up to a particular line and we're singing about our homeland, Samoa, and what Samoa means to us. You really do see that. And one of the hardest things I find when I'm working with my choir is to try and focus on my role as the choir director, because you can really be swept away with the message of the song and emotions can take over. And so sometimes I have choir singers that do feel very moved, that, you know, one sheds a tear, you know, but the focus is on delivering the song, that it's so that it's a nice, you know, unified sound, because our role as a choir and as singers is to convey that message. But at the same time, you can't help but feeling very moved and coming away from that experience feeling very emotional. So I do see all of that from my choir singers, and that's fine. I mean, because, you know, we're not robots. We are humans with feelings, and people who are singing from a place of deep love for our culture and for our communities and for our people. So it's definitely something that I experience a lot.
That's ethnomusicologist Dr. Rita Seumanu Tafa Palala. Thanks to my guests today, Rita Seumanu Tafa Palala and Heru Pinkasova. I'm hoping you already love to sing, but if you're ever feeling low or a bit out of sorts, try singing, because it will most likely bring you some much needed joy. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu Inga Stunzna.
Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. We acknowledge the Yagara, Turrbal and Darumbal peoples on whose land this program is produced. Amtasol na lokimu next time.